Hello, everyone. Welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And this is Ty.
We got old Marky Mark in the house. Mark Radlin's here with us. What up, Mark?
Not much, boys. It's an honor to be back, I gotta say.
We are so very happy to have you. This week, we are going to be taking a look at, in our installment of The Playback, the classic Jack Black film, School of Rock. Now, this isn't the first Jack Black film that we have covered. We have looked at Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny, along with Apocalypto, the web series based on their most recent, Tenacious D's most recent album. And School of Rock is a great film, and I am looking so forward to taking a look at it.
Yeah, this is a big part of our childhood. I mean, this is a childhood movie for me. This is honestly probably, like, of all the movies we've done, and we've done a lot, I'm not going to list them all out, but this is one of my absolute favorites. Still to this day, rewatching it, I still busted a gut. Like, just, it's a very pure movie too. It's good vibes, and the humor, it's just excellent. It's a great movie. So how The Playback works is we're going to go scene by scene and kind of go through the movie, talk about what we think of each scene, maybe sprinkle some interesting factoids, talk about some trivia, all that kind of interesting stuff, and just give you guys our thoughts on the movie as a whole and what it means to us and what it meant to everybody back then, even when we were growing up. I'm not going to say much more than that, because I want to get into it. So just remember that you can find all of our other past podcasts, www.supermetalworld.com. You can also find blogs and articles up there. We've been a little more active lately, so there should be some newer content up there for you. We write about kind of anything and everything under the sun, whether we have independent artists that are releasing material that we're writing about, or we wrote an article discussing our favorite 4th of July songs or our patriotic songs, however you want to think about it. Let's see. Last week, we had our 7th installment of Independent Metal Radio, where we featured underground metal bands, the cream of the crop. And it was that was a lot of fun. So anyway, www.supermetalworld.com is where you can find all that. We're available everywhere that you stream a podcast, Spotify, iTunes, etc. Please subscribe on Spotify and iTunes. Write a review on iTunes. Please rate and review. Share with a friend. Share this podcast with your friends. It is the only way that we can grow. And if you're fans of us and you'd like more of your friends to know about us, just please share. That means so much to us. That's all I ask. Just tell one person about it, or one rating on iTunes, or whatever. Just one
spread,
thing.
That's spread all. It out.
Yes. Spread it like, I can't believe it's not butter on a bagel. Yeah, that's the good stuff right there. I just had a bagel the other day, a blueberry bagel.
Did it have good stuff? I can't believe it's not butter on it.
It had something on it, and I could believe. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know actually, because when I have, I can't believe it's not butter. I personally can't tell, like, unless I, you know, physically made one bagel and I was sitting there and I put butter on one and I can't believe it's not butter on the other and tried, then I can maybe tell the difference. Mm-hmm. But if somebody, this bagel was given to me, prepped and ready for my mouth hole.
Oh yeah. You can't deny a bagel. Come on.
And I didn't see the preparation process. So I have no idea what it was on. It could have been poison. I could be about to die soon.
Oh, dang. We better get going on this then.
This is a great one to like, if I die, this will be a great movie to, as my last movie. Anyway, follow us on all social media. Search Super Metal World. Let's talk about some School of Rock. So excited. Horns high.
Horns high.
Horns high.
All right, guys, let's talk about everything School of Rock. This was released in 2003. Michael, you're usually pretty good at this. How old were we 2003?
11? I mean, what? How old are 11-year-olds, Mark? Is that fifth grade?
How old are 11-year-olds? They're 11.
Yeah. No. Sorry. That would be like a fifth grader?
Yeah. Okay. You guys would have been 12 years old.
I will say Mark knows because he's an instructor at an elementary school. So
yes,
like, when I'm, that's the only reason why he knows that.
And that'll play a big role into this. Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. when I'm not managing this, this podcast that makes $0 and 0 cents, I'm an educator.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we are a multinational podcast.
That's right. That's right.
From sea to shining sea and over the seas.
That's right. All the seas.
Anyway, guys, the point I'm trying to make is this, this video, I was just going to say, this movie was released in our youth. And you know what? We probably did maybe own a VHS copy of this where we still kind of, I think we were somewhat transitioning into DVDs around this time.
Yeah.
Fully transitioned, whatever.
They were still around. That's for sure.
Do you guys remember the first time you saw this movie? I know I usually like to ask this question. Mark, do you remember the first time?
Honestly, not really. I mean, I know I saw it when I probably rented it. And then I've only seen it three times because I saw it in 2003. And then I watched it on an airplane last year on the way to San Francisco. I remember that was my movie of choice. Still awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But, other than that, I don't remember my first time watching this movie.
I don't remember the first time I watched it. I assume that just means that I was young when I watched it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I would have seen it fairly closely to its release date, I would guess. Yeah. Something like that. But I don't remember.
You know, I don't remember the first time either, but I do remember that this movie, whether it was on the first watch or the second, had kind of a profound impact on me because I was kind of starting to shift into listening to more rock and roll. And, you know, later it would be heavy metal. But this movie actually taught me a lot. School of Rock is actually very educational on rock. Who would have thought, you know? Mm-hmm. And rewatching that, I was, you know, kindly reminded of all the awesome things that I take for granted that I know now. But if you didn't know anything about rock and roll, this really does teach you a little bit about rock and roll. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So this was directed by Richard Linklater. He's also directed Boyhood, that actually won one Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, and it was nominated for Best Original Screenplay and Best Achievement in Directing. Boyhood is this movie that he filmed over a long period of time, like when the kid was a boy all the way to I don't know how old.
Oh, that's right.
That's recent. That's like a fairly recent movie.
Yeah, relatively recent. You know, we may have still been in college when that Boyhood movie came out, but it's definitely like somewhat current. I don't know. Dazed and Confused. He also wrote that and directed it.
Oh, there you go.
And that's got Matthew McConaughey, you know, the famous I keep getting older and they stay the same age kind of that line.
All right.
Which I don't think would fly in 2019's landscape.
Love those Lincoln commercials.
Birth of McConaughey. It was released through Paramount. It's a breezy 109-minute runtime. That was really nice. I appreciate that when we're prepping for this.
Kudos.
It stars Jack Black. You guys know who Jack Black is, but he's been in the other films. You would recognize him are Nacho Libre, King Kong, Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny, Jumanji, Kung Fu Panda, Orange County, Shallow Hal, and he has acting credits as far back as 1984, guys. It's crazy. Of course, he was a child actor back then, but you guys remember the first Jack Black movie you watched? Let's go with Michael.
I'm thinking it was School of Rock.
Okay.
I'm almost certain it's School of Rock, for sure. Maybe King Kong. Maybe King Kong.
Yeah.
I think it was Shallow Hal. I'm pretty positive it's Shallow Hal.
If it wasn't Orange County, it was Shallow Hal for me too. Shallow Hal, I don't know if that movie holds up at all.
I think
probably
it's
not. But it's about Jack plays Hal, and he's a really shallow person, believe it or not. And he basically sees people. I don't know if he gets like he somehow gets the gift to see people for what they are on the inside, on the outside. So people who are really ugly on the inside look ugly on the outside to him. So basically, like, the way the movie plays is that, like, the more overweight people he sees are actually maybe, like, is this making any sense? It's really confusing to explain
yeah,
now that I...
Yeah, he ends right. up he ends up in a relationship with an overweight woman that he doesn't yes. realize is such because...
He doesn't see her that
this way. Curse, yeah, she's like, you know, obviously, like, this physically very attractive person, but she ends up being, like, a really good and kind-hearted soul.
Which now, again, with 2019 eyes, you know, we're so aware and woke about everything. That is also probably like a really hardcore fat shaming movie because it's basically saying fat people are evil, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's that. But there's also like the, you know, the positive nature of like it's well on the inside that counts. So, you know,
exactly.
It walks the line for sure.
Yeah. And it was you can't hold that movie to today's standards. You know, it's just not fair. Okay. Anyway, Joan Cusack is in this movie. She, I guess like the voice, like if I say Jessie from Toy Story, that's who Joan Cusack is. Jessie being the female cowboy in those Toy Story films. She's also Aaron's biological mother in The Office. Aaron being the one who, you know, takes over Pam's job as like the front desk. Office assistant or whatever you want to say. She also had a stint with SNL. I put a sting. She had a sting with SNL. I have in my notes, whatever that means. Sarah Silverman is in this in a smaller role. She's the naggy, bitchy girlfriend, for lack of a better term.
That's accurate.
And you would know Sarah from, of course, her stand-up career and Wreck-It Ralph. She's that animated, there's a couple of them. She's the little girl in that. So anyway, box office, they estimate the budget of this was about $35 million. Opening weekend in the United States, it made close to $20 million. And it grossed about $81 million. The cumulative worldwide gross was $131 million. So it made back its budget for sure. That's
pretty good. Pretty solid.
Anyway,
well deserved.
That is the foundation. Of which this movie was built. So we will get into the scenes here, and I will start off with the first scene. So a rock band, how it starts is a rock band called No Vacancy performs at a nightclub 3 weeks before auditioning for this Battle of the Bands competition. Guitarist Dewey Finn, who is played by Jack Black, who essentially Jack Black in this movie is just being Jack Black.
That's right. Just like every other one of his movies, just Jack Black.
Why did they didn't just call this person Jack Black? I don't know. But he's Dewey Finn in this movie. He performs like some crazy onstage antics, including a failed stage dive that abruptly ends the band's performance. I'll tell you guys just a couple things I noticed when watching this scene. I really like the camera work leading into this rock and roll club as a way of doing the opening credits. That's pretty original, pretty awesome. Like, it'll have like a poster that says like Jack Black or like Joan Cusack. And then that's how it, you know, does the opening credits. This, of course, being still part of the era where we still cared about opening credits, I guess, enough to put them in. I think movies still somewhat do that nowadays. It's just we've found like more entertaining ways to do it, I guess. And this is one of those. I have other things to say, but I think I'm going to flip it over to Mark. Mark, what'd you think of this opening scene?
I liked it a lot. I thought the band was pretty solid. No Vacancy for I'm a bar band, nightclub type band. I just wanted to know what JB's thought process was trying to do a stage dive into that scarce crowd there, because like he's a pretty heavy set dude and he's relying on like four people to carry him. You know, usually when people stage dive, it's like at a packed arena and there's like 20 hands at all times holding him up as he's going back. You know, I thought that was pretty good. But overall, I thought it was a nice little opening scene, nice camera work, like you alluded to. Michael, did you notice anything else?
So Dewey is a stellar guitarist. So the song goes, right? They're playing their song, whatever. And then it goes into the solo section, and man, Dewey just shreds. I was impressed by the quality of the band and where it takes us. You see this band. And obviously, he's going, it's the School of Rock, so something's going to happen with the band, but it's it's a good band. He's shredding. Maybe it was a little bit too much, but Dewey's obviously a very skilled guitarist.
I think the one thing that I laughed out loud about was the flip phone. He opens up his flip phone. He's like, these guys suck, leave. Jack is, he kind of, the way he, I guess the first things he, first thing he does vocally in this movie is he lets out when he jumps in on those backing vocals. And he kind of has an overlong solo. It's not a bad solo. And they're performing in kind of this modern take on a hair metal band, a hard rock type band, kind of with Miles Kennedy type vocals. I think this fits in right with 2003. We had bands like this that were trying to recapture that rock and roll, hair metal, classic rock type vibe. I guess in 2003, solos weren't incredibly the most popular thing to do. This was new metal was happening, and not a lot of solos happened there. So I guess if you want to try to give an explanation for, because I don't think they were as bad as they played it off, but we are given the impression that Dewey, Jack's character, is kind of a big personality and maybe a little selfish because he's extra loud on the backing vocals, and he does take he overdoes the solo. I mean, his bandmates aren't prepared for that, you can tell. So I guess we're to take that away to say he's a bit selfish.
He's still in a little bit of the room while the main vocalist is trying to sing. He's nudging over and trying to get in to do some group vocals. Mm-hmm. It's give him some space, man.
Yeah. So I guess that's kind of what I said. Well, this is what we're taken to believe right away about Dewey. So anyway, that brings us to the next scene, and we're doing it different this week, guys. We're doing scene by scene. We're trading off. So you're not going to have to hear my voice as much. So Michael, what do you got for the next scene?
Yeah, so in the following morning, after that opening show, after that embarrassing stage dive, Dewey wakes up. He's in his apartment. He's got a mattress on the floor. And he wakes up in the apartment that he lives in with Ned Schneebly. That's his roommate, played by Mike White, which I don't know. I don't recognize him. I don't know what other sort of roles he's played. But Ned and his domineering girlfriend, Patty DeMarco, of course, that's Sarah Silverman. They inform him that he's got to make up for his share of the rent or move out because it appears that Dewey is a bit of a freeloader. Dewey doesn't want to pay the rent. Classic Jack Black setup for a story is he's got to pay the rent.
It's classic.
It's kind of the way every Jack Black movie or... because Tenacious D starts with they got to pay the rent. Apocalypto starts with paying the rent, right? Does Apocalypto start with paying the rent?
Oh, yeah. It's all about paying the rent in a lot of Jack Black's.
All about the rent.
A lot of his music ventures, music movies or whatever.
So I think in general, this scene for me was mostly about kind of setting the stage, who is Ned? Because Ned comes up quite a bit. He's not a major character, but he's definitely a significant minor character. And what his sort of submissive character is like, how Dewey has been able to walk all over him all these years, because it's set up Dewey and Ned have known each other for a long time. And, Patty now his very aggressive and, dominant girlfriend are there, and they're basically just bitching at him, telling him that, hey, you've got to get out, get a job and figure out a way to pay the rent. So, Ty, what are your thoughts?
Well, first off, I couldn't get over Jack Black, or Dewey, I guess, his curtained off room. They have him in like this corner.
Yeah, he's not. He doesn't have a bedroom.
Yeah, it's like
it's like a den.
Yeah, it's like this curtained off. Yeah, we had a buddy who. Long story short, we lived in like a 3-bedroom apartment with a den, and we kept him. We kept him in the den. I don't know why I said it like that, but he lived in the den.
Get back to your
den
hole.
The den had no windows.
Definitely not a legal living setup.
Did Craig have a curtain?
He had a door.
He had a door.
He had a door, okay.
Craig loved his den, okay? He really did.
He was like a little mole.
So anyway, Craig's den. I couldn't get over this curtained off little, I shouldn't say roomed. It's not a curtained off room. It's literally like a piece of the living room that they have put curtains, like installed curtains above, like to section off this little piece. And then he's like, I couldn't figure out the bed either. He's like in a pillow bed. Is he laying on couch pillows?
It looks like a twin mattress, like a tiny little, like little kid's mattress. I don't know. It's not a great setup.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. But you get a lot of personality there too. You see like amps and music, you know, like rock and roll type things that somebody who's like involved in a rock and roll band would have, and like, you know, Sex Pistols poster, or like, you know, just posters of famous bands in rock and roll and even heavy metal history. So that's kind of cool. And I think I like the introduction of the characters, like you said. I think Sarah's not entirely wrong. Sarah Silverman playing Patty here, because Dewey has been mooching off of Ned, and when Patty leaves the room, Dewey even mentions this. He's like, "I've been mooching off you for years." Mm-hmm. You know, like, why is this a problem now? So we get to learn all about, you know, the basics of Ned and Dewey's relationship, and how Patty has kind of like crashed their party. So Mark, do you have anything to add?
Not much. I think in this scene Ned mentions that he's like a substitute teacher, right?
Oh yeah, I think they do mention that.
Yeah, he says he's like doing pretty well for himself, and you know, he's not wrong. Like, there are people that just are substitute teachers for their career. You know, you can make a living off of that. I think it's really interesting though, because he mentions a little later on how much he makes a week. And I think, do they live in New York City?
I'm not sure. It's definitely, I don't know. It's definitely a big city. Let's put it that way.
Cause, I did the math, and it's not really as great as you think. If you're living in a big city making that, you know, if you're living in South Dakota or something, it's fine. But, I thought that was pretty interesting. Yes. Did you guys have anything else before we get to the next scene?
I
wanted to add, when Patty was suggesting selling his guitars, Dewey's response is, "Sell one of my guitars? Would you tell Picasso to sell one of his guitars?" I really enjoyed that line. I don't know. And then Ned complaining, "Come on, man, I may never have another girlfriend. Like, you got to pay the rent. Patty's on my ass." Anyway, it's good exchanges.
Right. It's a fair point. And I think I had an interesting fact about that. As far as like the whole, like, would you part Picasso from one of his paintings or whatever? That is actually interesting, because when Ned asked Dewey to sell one of his guitars to help pay rent, and he says, like, the subject of Picasso's, a lot of Picasso's paintings are actually guitars. Like, if you look through, just an interesting connection. Yeah. Picasso, I guess, paints a lot of guitars. I don't know a lot of Picasso. You know, I know the name, of course.
Right. Okay. So maybe, all right. That actually,
and that makes sense. You know,
low key, pretty smart.
Yeah, low-key makes sense, because, you know, because like you, I said the line wrong. You said it correct. He says, would you ask Picasso to sell one of his guitars? So that's kind of funny. Anyhow, take it away, Mark. Let's go to the next scene.
Sounds good. Not a whole lot in this scene. Basically, Dewey just goes to rehearse with his band, No Vacancy. And sadly, he finds out there that he's been replaced by a another guitarist who is amply named Spider, which is which is a great name for a guitarist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a couple things I noticed in the scene other than Spider's name is JB is wearing a shirt that says Getting Lucky in Kentucky.
I also laughed at that.
Pretty good shirt. That's about all I had, I guess. Dewey mentions that kind of the standard, you know, you guys are selling out and you don't care about the music anymore and the meaning of the music. You just want to, you know, basically be corporate now. And that's kind of a classic plot line with musicians, I feel like. I don't know if you noticed that. Ty, did you notice anything else in that scene?
Just some little things like, you know, they make Dewey out to be the scapegoat. They kind of vote him out of the band. And it seems like it's a band that he put together. So that's like doubly painful. And they say they're trying to land a record deal. And I was like, you guys are trying to land a record deal? You're playing in like some really small club that's, it's not like they were on the cusp of a record deal and Dewey screwed it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The people obviously at their shows don't really know who they are.
Yeah. Right. I really enjoyed it. It took me back, to the early 2000s when like Jack Black said, read between the lines and he holds up like his pointer finger, his middle finger and his ring finger.
So lame.
Yeah, really lame, but pretty funny. And Jack says something along the lines of, or Dewey, I'm going to call Dewey Jack and Jack Dewey the whole time. They're the same. It's Jack Black being Jack Black. Anyway, Jack says, you're going to be a funny little footnote on my epic ass. That was pretty funny. And then he like kicks the cymbal or whatever. But that's all I got.
I just want to point out Spider's one line in this, this entire scene is that when he's the vocalist says, this is Spider, he's replacing you. Spider just looks at him like cold, dead eyes. Sup, dog. It's his only line in the entire scene. Sup, dog.
Spider is a douche.
Yeah, total douche.
Okay, anyway. So later, while attempting to sell his guitar for rent money, Dewey answers a phone call from Rosalie or Roz Mullins, who is played by Joan Cusack, the principal of Horace Green Prep School, inquiring for Ned about a short-term position as a substitute teacher. This sets up the premise of basically the whole movie, what we're getting into. You know, Dewey has pretty much hit rock bottom, and he's a desperate man, and an opportunity arises, and he's about to take it. Michael, any thoughts on this scene?
Well, the scene starts with him attempting to sell one of his guitars, so you know things are getting a little desperate for him. Opens on the phone. He must be talking to some sort of guitar store or pawn shop or something. It's a 1968 SG, mint condish. That's
I love the mint condish.
That's a classic Jack Blackism type.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ish, the end of it.
Yeah, there's just him responding to the call. Like he was like, "Oh, you know, Ned is not in right now," and then he realizes there's a great opportunity for him to become a fake substitute teacher, and you know he fakes like he's transferring the phone over.
I love that part too, where he's like
he's like wrapping the cord
around the phone and like fumbling with it. That's funny.
And he responds, and as the scene ends. Hello, this is Ned Schneebly. Because that's Ned's voice, I guess.
I love how he doesn't carry that voice on throughout the movie.
Just that one time.
Just for that part. And I think he also learns that, because he's like, how long's the gig? And she's like, excuse me? How long's the job? And she's like, that'll be determined, whatever. Says it'll be determined later. And that he's going to make $650 a week. And, it's all because the teacher that the regular teacher, the staff teacher, whatever you want to say, broke their leg on their way to school in the morning, which that's pretty horrific. Whatever happened to them.
Yeah.
Mark, anything else?
Not much. You mentioned that total $650 a week. That is pretty damn accurate for what subs make. I got to say they did their research there.
Even back in 2003, huh?
Well, now it's probably different.
Okay.
It's probably a little more then, but I guess substitutes now in a in like rural areas, substitutes will make about 125 a day.
Okay.
So, you know, do the math from there. It's a little bit more, but thought that was kind of interesting. That was good research on their part. So
nice job.
Yeah. I think, Michael, you got the next scene.
Yeah. So we've basically established the premise of the movie. Jack Black, Dewey, down on his luck, kicked out of his band. He doesn't have a job. He needs to pay the rent. What's he going to do? He's going to fake like he's Ned Schneebly, and work at Horace Prep, elementary school, Horace Green Prep, which happens to be the best elementary school in the entire state. So no pressure, Dewey. So he arrives at school, for the first day. He decides to name himself Mr. S because he forgets how to spell Schneebly on the chalkboard. And he is all over the place on his first day. He obviously doesn't like, he's just there to fake and, get a paycheck. That's all he's there to do. He's very lazy. Tells the kids he's hung over, steals their lunch. And the class is obviously very confused. And I gotta say, this immediately I was completely thrown off by his appearance right when the scene starts, because prior he's like kind of a little haggard, right? He's got like a medium length beard, like definitely not like clean shaven, and he's got this scruffy hair that's just always in a mess. And he shows up with this like slicked back hair, completely clean shaven. He's like in this nice coat. He's got, he's wearing a scarf, really cleaned up, like looking good. Dewey, Ty, do you have any, things that jump out to you for the scene?
No, I do love his appearance. That red scarf, slick back hair, the little bow tie. I love him asking Roz, cause she's kind of showing him the ropes, showing him around, asking if he can cut out early for the day. Cause he's like, I got some things to do. So she obviously, he's like, okay, I can stay. And then, them talking about like verbal abuse versus corporal punishment. Yeah. And she's like, you just take them to me if they need to be disciplined. Another funny thing I liked is when she first walks him into the room, I can't remember her exact words, but she's like, you know, introduce yourself to the class or write your name on the board. And his delivery is, yes, yes, I will. And he goes up to like write Mr. Schneebly, but he, like you said, he halfway he gets stumbled. He's like, you're just going to call me Mr. S. The hangover lesson is pretty hilarious. He's like, you know, who knows what a hangover is. And, he's like, you know, I have a hangover. We're going to start on all this crapola tomorrow. And we get introduced to Miranda Cosgrove as being who plays Summer. And she's that one goody two shoes that's like in every class, you know?
Definitely like a know-it-all.
Exactly. And we had one of those. I'm not going to call her out, but you know who she is, Michael. We had a goody two shoe that.
That's right.
Another line that Jack says to Roz, Dewey says to Roz, is, I'm a teacher. All I need are minds for molding. So
he's here. He's ready to take this job seriously.
There is like a small like cut scene where we get a little introduction to how cold and like non-sociable Roz is. Like when she's talking to that little girl and the little girl's like beside herself crying.
Yeah.
And Roz is like, would you like a hug? And she's like, no.
Yeah, she's like trying to calm this like little girl down. She's probably like in second grade. And Roz looks at her. She's like trying to be calm, but she's like shouting at her. She's like, no, you don't want me to have to call your parents, do you? It's okay, Emily. Just try to be a bit more conscientious. Do you want a hug?
Like, using like these big words. So we get introduced, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is like Roz kind of has a stick up her butt, to put it not politely, but that's what we were led to believe. So anyway, Mark, sorry, I blabbered on. Anything you got to add there?
No worries. I too wrote down that I'm a teacher. All I need is minds for molding. Would love a coffee mug of that at some point. That would be just, that would make my ear. couple things off first glance, that class, and I'll say this again a couple times, is a dream class for a teacher. Like, I don't know if it was this scene or another one where they're like, are we going to learn something today? Like, I've never had students say that before. Like, mad, you know, for a teacher going off the cuff a little bit. They're very well-mannered, intelligent. So props to those kids, very well-behaved. Also, what Jack easily, God, Dewey, I mean, what Dewey could have easily have done that first day is just played a video like a lot of subs do.
Classic sub.
Yep, just wheel in that TV, pop in a video. But on the other hand, the school staff probably should have had more plans made for Jack.
Yeah, I thought he was kind of like thrown into the fire. I mean, I get that she broke her leg in the morning, but yeah.
Oh, totally. And if you ever sub and you show up, like, sub plans as a teacher are like the worst thing in the world, because sub plans are like 5 to 8 pages long because you want to be super specific for your sub. But like, if you show up and there's nothing, you're just kind of fucked.
Right.
For 8 hours. So school kind of dropped the ball on that. Definitely agree.
For sure.
You guys have anything else to add to that?
I will just say that we do get another little scene at the end of this that, you know, didn't warrant a big discussion, but it's basically it's Dewey hanging up the flyers of his band. Like, he wants to start another band. And there's like two guys that are like, you know, this guy sucks. And Dewey's there to hear it. So we kind of learn he doesn't have a great reputation in the underground rock and roll scene, really. And he also, it kind of takes us back to the apartment too. And he pleads for Ned to join back with him as a bassist. Cause I guess we learned that they were previously in a band together, and Patty shuts down Dewey's plans, and the reunion of Dewey and Ned is going to have to wait. So that's the only part I wanted to add, just a little cutscene.
Yeah. And the sign that Dewey was hanging up too said something along the lines of, Dewey Finn wants you for the most rockin' band ever.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
It's a pretty good drawing of him too.
Yeah, it was. It was nice. And what was Ned's former band? Was it like Maggot Head or something?
Maggot Death. Like
Maggot Death.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I didn't even catch that till you just put it together real quick. That's like Megadeth.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. So in the next scene, basically the gist of the next scene is the following day at school, Dewey overhears a music class going on in the other room and forms a plan to form them into a new band and audition for a Battle of the Bands competition coming up. He casts Zach Mooneyham as the lead guitarist, Freddie Jones as drummer, Katie on the bass, who was the cello player, Lawrence, or Larry, as he's known as, on the keyboard, and himself as lead vocalist and guitarist. And then I believe in another scene or another, or later on rather, he assigns the rest of the class to different roles like backup singers, groupies, what do you say? And security, and Summer, who we had mentioned, played by Miranda Cosgrove, as the band's manager. Overall, guys, this was probably my favorite scene of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple things I'll mention, because I wrote down a lot, but I'm just going to mention a little bit. This is the first time Dewey mentions the man. And
yes.
Whenever the man's involved and someone's going to stick it to him, I'm like 100%, 1,000,000% in.
You're like all in on sticking it to the man?
Yeah, anytime a rock song says like boss man or tax man in it, I'm all in. There's a, you guys know that Skid Row song, Youth Gone Wild?
Yes.
There's a line in there. There's a line in that song where he's like, boss man ringing in my ear, tell me who I'm supposed to be.
Yes. Yes.
All in. All in. And I guess I've never asked anyone else's question, but I actually have a couple of these different themes in music that I really like the daughter. If there's like a song about the farmer's daughter or the preacher's daughter, boss yep. man's daughter, all yep. in. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, do you guys have any other, like themes and songs? I mean, it's kind of a weird question, but, or even in movies, like I know some people like certain scary movies were like, there's something wrong with the house. Just all of a sudden. I don't know if you guys have any.
Well, I think the tropes I really like in rock and roll, for one, I love the man concept. That, I thought, is a great lesson about rock and roll. Rock and roll is about sticking it to the man. Truly. That's where like the anger and the angst of rock and roll and punk and heavy metal, it all stems from the man. The man is society.
Stick it to the man.
So I love that. I also love like a good underdog story, which you'll get a lot in rock and roll, or even a good like, I don't necessarily love it, but in rock and roll, I kind of like a good just like filthy party story, you know, like Axl Rose in Mr. Brownstone, like I get up around 7, get out of bed around 9, like he's just going through his day and like how much of a mess he is. And I can't think of any other examples, but I know there's more in rock and roll, of course, of that kind of like, here's this story about how much of a party animal I am. And it's just kind of can be gritty and awesome. And it can be also cheesy sometimes. So
I'm also really big on the night. Like if a song says like, we're on the edge of the night or like we tonight to do something, like I really like that one too.
Yeah.
Michael, you got me.
I gotta go with this is a pretty, it's mostly I think a trope in metal, but anytime that people talk about like mythology, like whether that's like Greek mythology or like Nordic mythology, that sort of stuff, like all in on that, like Trivium's album Shogun, like that the entire premise of that album is right up my alley, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I guess the part of the scene I really liked is just seeing how talented those kids were at their instruments. And as someone that has attended many an elementary music concert where the volume is just loud and their set list includes Hot Cross Buns and Jingle Bells, those kids are like insanely talented.
They're so good. And like, I love, how about Dewey's eyebrow movement, his eyebrow gymnastics in that scene.
Creeping through the window watching him play. Yeah. Oh yeah, he's like making like the wave.
He's like his right eyebrow raises then his left. It's actually pretty talented. It's like The Rock doing the people's eyebrow.
Yeah, very much so. I think the best part of that scene though is him teaching Zach how to play the guitar.
Oh, that's like chill inducing. Yeah, that's awesome.
It was so good. Is Smoke on the Water the song that everyone learns on guitar right away?
I think those three are like, you're going to learn some version of those three. Michael and I had the same instructor when we went very briefly to lessons and then we were self-taught from there. But before that, his name was Austin Wellman. I'll never forget his name. And he taught us the same kind of stuff. He taught us Smoke on the Water, Iron Man, Highway to Hell. I'm sure we forced him to teach us Metallica as well. Not that he had to be like, oh, twist my arm on Metallica, but like, I think he also probably taught us Enter Sandman or For Whom the Bell Tolls or something like that. That's why that was so chill inducing. It reminded me so much of learning to play guitar, you know, and what songs you pick.
Yeah. And I think, kind of piggybacking off that too, Dewey shows in the scene too, like, he's an awesome musician, but like he also has a really great way of connecting with kids.
Yes.
You know, like, so as bad of a normal general classroom teacher he is, like he has this like energy about him where kids like gravitate towards him. Like, you know, he's so into what he's doing that kids just kind of, you know, leech onto that. I personally would love Dewey or JB as a teacher, you know, just super enthusiastic. You know, especially as like a band teacher. I mean, I actually thought our band teacher was pretty cool too. Shout out to Mr. Fichtner.
Mr. Fichtner.
Yeah, because you know, he would like incorporate rock songs into band, you know, and I don't think maybe not in rural North Dakota, but like not a lot of other schools were doing that. Like we could play Enter Sandman and You Smoke on the Water. And like, I think we played a Pearl Jam song for like a concert one time. Like, that's kind of unheard of, but do you guys have anything else for this scene before we throw it over to I think Utah?
Yeah, I'll make a couple of points. This school is $15,000 a year.
Yep, I was going to bring that up.
Holy fuck.
Yep, that is a lot.
My parents don't spend $15,000 a year for recess. What?
Isn't that what Summer says?
Yeah.
But didn't we pay less for undergrad at UND?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That's insane. Anyway, so that gives you an idea that, you know, these are some rich kids with every opportunity in the world to be successful because they have the financial means. He does talk about his hot take. I loved how he says, like, MTV ruined rock and roll, and he considers MTV the man, and he goes through, like, a lot of things that are the man, like The Boss, you know, Roz, things like The Parents being the man. I really liked his mid-pee aha moment. He's peeing and he realizes, oh, wait a minute, maybe I should go see if these kids are any good because maybe they could be in my band, which is a little selfish of him. But have you guys ever had a mid-pee revelation?
none as profound as recruiting fifth graders children to play in my band.
mine are more like in the shower or when I'm laying in bed at night, I'll think of something. You guys ever do that? Like you think of something super creative, but you're like not around a pen and paper to write it down. That's where mine normally come in.
I don't think I've ever had a mid-pee revelation either. I think my thinking comes in other places. I don't even know if I've had a mid-shit revelation, but maybe. Anyway, I thought this was funny because also in Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny, he has a mid-shit revelation, kind of.
Oh, he's
taking a shit
in
that stall, and that dude walks in. Was it Dustin Hoffman's character or something? Or is it Dustin Hoffman?
No, Tim Robinson.
Yeah, Tim Robinson. He walks.
Is it Robinson?
Tim
Robbins.
Robbins. We got it eventually. And he mentioned something about the Rock and Roll History Museum, and Jables just shits, drops a huge loaf. Anyway, moving on from that. So he listens to the kids like Mark had mentioned, and I love how he goes to his van and starts pulling in all the equipment. I don't know how none of the other teachers saw him do that because there was so much equipment he had. It's like, holy shit, he's got everything in that van. Let's see here. The school lunch was really fancy. I noticed that, but you know, it's a fancy prep school and they got, you know, a very fancy lunch. And Jack talking to Lawrence or Larry, who plays the keyboard, about being the cat's pajamas and the bee's knees. It's a pretty righteous conversation. And, the bee's knees, you're the cat's pajamas, like, to give Larry that confidence. 'Cause he comes to Jack or Dewey, what have you, saying, kind of saying like, I don't think I'm cool enough to be in the band. You know, I'm kind of square. It's like, oh no, you're going to, you know, you can play the piano righteously. You're going to be one of the coolest cats out there. And then they start doing this, this secret handshake where Jack puts out a platform and he says like, or no, excuse me. He makes Larry put out a platform. He puts his fingers on the platform. He goes, let's rock today. Which I think is really funny.
The greatest secret handshake of all time.
And then he's like, slap it, shoot it, kaboot it. So we'll work on the rest of that later, which I think is cool. You know, like getting a kid to like think you and him have like this secret handshake makes him feel cool and accepted.
Yeah, boosts up the confidence. That's for sure. That's those kids need.
Other things when, you know, later on the scene when Jack is kind of assigning everybody things, he's calling them all nicknames, which is like really fucking funny to me. Jack came up with all those nicknames actually, like, you know, for
really
movie. Like, I don't know if he set them off the cuff or he just thought of them and then used them in the scene, but he thought of all those
cool
nicknames.
That's pretty cool.
We also get, I pledge allegiance to the band of Mr. Schneebly and will not fight him for creative control and will defer to him on all issues related to the musical direction of the band.
So they had to agree to the terms and conditions, basically.
Yeah, which is pretty funny. Michael, do you have anything to add? I know I said a lot there.
The only thing that I really truly wanted to add was when he officially assigns them the class project of the rock band. He lets them know that it will test their head and their mind and their brains too.
A couple of interesting facts while we're on this great scene. It is one of the best scenes in the entire
movie.
This
is like, this is probably like the kickstart. This is like the critical point in the entire, it's of course not the climax, but definitely like the critical point, kind of like the rest of the rest of the movie is going to be based on this one scene.
Yeah, so all the kids really play their instruments, and the backup singers are real vocalists. Jack Black also played a bit of guitar in the movie, for example, you know, when he's teaching Smoke on the Water, Iron Man, and various other songs to Zach. He doesn't do any of the guitar solos, per se, like the leads. But, I mean, we that's not a surprise to us. We know Jack can play, you know, some pretty good rhythm, like acoustic guitar and everything like that. But the kids are really as talented as they are portrayed. They're really doing all that, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and another interesting thing too to go off of that, Ty, is Summer, the kid that has the worst voice in the movie. She has like that nasally kind of sound. She actually is probably the kid that went on to be the most successful musician out of all. Miranda Cosgrove. She had a top 20 hit or so. Like I'd say about 10 years ago. It was called Kissing You. Like she's actually had an actual career off of music. I think she's done some singing too on like Drake and Josh and some other like Nickelodeon programming. So kind of interesting. Dang. That she's the worst voice in the movie, but she's actually the one that went on to be the most successful of the
memory
bunch.
All alone in the moonlight. But I have another. I like how he turns to the rest of the band. It's like, yikes. Also, I got another interesting factoid. So like you were just saying, Miranda Cosgrove can actually really sing. She took about a 45-minute bad singing lesson to sing horribly to the song Memory when Jack is looking for backup singers.
Interesting.
Wow. So she had to learn how to sing bad because she's too good.
Imagine that. Imagine being that good.
When Jack is going through, there's a lot of factoids in this scene, so I'm just going to get to him while we're talking about it. Dewey's nickname for Freddie, who's the drummer, Freddie Jones, is he calls him Spazzy McGee, to which I laughed really hard. It's a reference to an early draft of the character in which Freddie is a spastic sufferer of ADD, and he can be seen taking Ritalin in class. So so it doesn't really fit that much, you know, like now that I know that fact, I'm like, yeah, why did he call him Spazzy McGee? I guess because he plays the drums, but it's from an old version of the character.
Ah.
So anyway, I think I have the next scene.
Indeed.
You do.
Awesome. Okay. So, yes. And Cello, we get Cello in that too.
Oh, of course.
Cello, you got a bass. And he calls the class project Rock Band. That's another thing that we got to say. Okay. Anyway. So the project takes over normal lessons, but it helps the students embrace their talents and overcome their problems. He reassures Lawrence or Larry, who feels nerdy and is worried about not being cool enough for the rest of the band, which I alluded to. Zach, whose overbearing father, disapproves of rock and roll, that dang rock and roll. And Tamika, who's an overweight girl who's too self-conscious to even audition for being a backup singer right away, despite having this amazing voice. We just get a lot is happening. Jack is starting to teach them about rock and roll, and I really enjoy this. There is the scene where Jack pulls up the next day, so this would be the day after talking about for the first time the project Rock Band, and Summer is waiting for him, and she said she looked up what a groupie is, and she doesn't want to be a groupie, and she gets upgraded to band manager right then and there,
which is reasonable.
Yeah. Yes,
that's a great role for her. Yeah, she is of course factotum. I don't know what that means, but she's class factotum.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever that means. Interesting question I'm going to ask you guys before I get into this a little further. Which student do you think you would be out of this group of students? Mark, is there one that like you'd be like, I'd be him? That's me.
I thought about that. I don't know. Maybe you guys would be better at answering that for me. I think maybe not that my dad would ever do this, but maybe Zach, you know,
sure. I
don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think my father would be the exact opposite actually of doing that, but I think maybe him. I don't know. I kind of like Freddy. I kind of liked his energy, but I don't know if that's me necessarily. What do you guys think? What would you guys be?
Well, I feel like thinking about who I was back then as at that age, I probably would have been Freddy. I was kind of a little shithead until I got into like junior high school. So I feel like I'd be Freddy. Michael, who do you think you'd be?
Man. Well, I play bass now. So maybe Katie, she's pretty chill. Mm-hmm. She's pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like, you know, that seems appropriate.
Well, listeners, just think about who you'd be, you know, little mental exercise for you. Who would you be? Anyway, so he asked them, I can't remember like the premise of the question, but, he asked them like something, maybe their favorite artists or who they want to be like. And, you know, they're like Christina Aguilera, Liza Minnelli, Puff Daddy. And he's just like scoffing at like all of it. and he's like, what about like Led Zeppelin? Getting the lead out, AC/DC, Motorhead. He goes through like all these iconic rock and roll and somewhat heavier bands, which is really, really cool to see. And then he does mention like they're wondering what song they're going to do or how they're going to, you know, what they're going to practice. And he mentions that it's going to be something he wrote. And they're like, well, let's hear it. I like, you know, just like kids do. They'll put you right on the spot like that. Dewey is a little unnerved by this. Like he wasn't ready to perform it like right away like this.
Mm-hmm.
So to like get himself centered, he's like tip of the tongue, teeth in the lips.
What does that even mean?
Whatever that means.
Tip and of then the he, tongue, like, teeth and the lips.
And then he does like a little vocal, like do re mi, but like, it's like just hits an A or something like that. I can't remember. So then he gets into this song and I'm going to try my best to perform a little bit of it for you guys. I'm not going to, you know, torture you the whole time, but he talks about how there's going to be like a kind of like this fog rolling in and maybe like dim lights or whatever. And he's like, in the end of time, there was a man who knew the road and the writing was written on the stone. So right after that, are you guys in on Jack's song?
100%. I'm so in. Yeah. Oh. I'm 1,000% in.
It's his song's called The Legend of the Rem too. I'm pretty sure. Right.
Oh yeah.
And then it goes on. In the ancient time, an artist led the way, but no one seemed to understand. In his heart, he knew the artist must be true, but the legend of the rent was way past due. So great.
I want to hear all of that. I want all of that song.
Yeah, I do want a studio quality version of that song. And then like he goes into the more rocking, like, Will you think you'll be just fine without me, but you're mine. He's just like screaming in front of these kids. You think you can kick me out of the band? Well, there's just one problem there. The band is mine. How can you kick me out of what is mine? And then, of course, you know, you're not hardcore unless you live hardcore. But the Legend of the Rent was way hardcore. It's fucking brilliant.
It's so good.
I love how when he's performing that, like, he's just like all in his mind. He knows every single intricate part of that song, you know, and he's like performing. And he's like, oh, yeah, then over here, there's this and this and this. And it's just it's like his like a November rain or something. He's just like a mad genius.
Yeah, it's his masterpiece.
Yeah, he's worked his whole life to create Legend of the Rent.
I have more, but I don't want to hog everything. So I'm going to defer to you, Mark.
Okay. You had mentioned him getting the blank stares after mentioning bands. And I just want to tell you guys, if you are someone that deals with kids, really, no matter what the age is, that is so true. I felt that so much. I have been in that almost that exact same scenario where I mentioned different musicians and bands I liked or movies. And it's just like, what's that? You know, that was that was a tough one. I once was on a break and I had like a Foo Fighters song playing and a kid had walked in and he's like, oh, who are these guys? And I was like, oh, they're the Foo Fighters. They're one of my favorite bands. And he's like, oh, my mom watches that show. And I'm like, they're not a show. They're
no,
she
they're doesn't.
Yeah, and she, he's like, yeah, Food Fighters, which is
food
a show.
Fighters.
Food Fighters was a show. And I was
oh
like,
my God.
No, see, that's a show that this is a band. He's like, yeah, she watches that show. It's where they like two people make meals and then someone judges them. I'm like, no, that's not. Stop.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, like just a lot of that goes on.
I love that show.
I also think it was funny when Dewey is having lunch with his fellow coworkers, and they ask him something about like standardized testing or some teacher lingo, and he just quotes a Whitney Houston song. He says, like, I believe that children are our future. And he basically just does the chorus of that song, which I thought was pretty good. Michael, do you have anything else to add? That's about all I had written down in that scene.
Well, the whole scene starts with him creating a new schedule, right? So he's the sub. It's his class. He sets a schedule. And from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. is rock history. Perfect.
Hell yeah.
Then from 10 to 11 is rock appreciation and theory.
Rock appreciation and theory.
And then it's band practice for the rest of the day. And the funny thing about it is that, like, these kids are obviously smart, because as the movie progresses, like, they start getting into it and, like, they're listening. Like, he assigns them CDs to listen to, and they start dressing, you know, they start dressing rock and roll and dressing punk. And they really kind of absorb all of that culture, which as the movie progresses and like these kids' characters develop, you can see that. You can see like his teaching. It's not just the band. It's, I think it's these 3 hours in the morning where they learn about history and appreciation for the rock and roll really comes through. And I just thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, he's like teaching him about different, like, I think it's Zach he's talking to, where he's telling him about like different like stage antics you should do when you have a guitar, you know, not be so, not be so.
Loosey goosey, baby. Loosey goosey.
Yeah, loosey goosey. And he's like, rock is about the passion, man. And that's so true. It's so
true. It is.
Yeah. It's like, I would rather see a band that's maybe not, maybe their live stuff isn't as close to their radio, how it sounds on the radio, but they have like good stage antics and they're entertaining, rather than a band that sounds, you know, like exactly like they do on the radio,
yeah,
but they just stand there and play, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Dewey's teaching him right.
He also shows Zach the power stance, which is pretty awesome. And discusses to him, you know, just not being a stiff performer, because rock isn't about being a stiff performer. It's about breaking the rules, sticking it to the man. Couple other things. Dewey has challenged some of the members, or not the members, the class, to come up with a name for the band. And she's giving him a bunch of suggestions. He's like, no, gosh, no, it's too weak, you know. And then she gives him pig rectum as a recommendation. and Roz is like, what?
Just hears one of the students just yell pig rectum across the cafeteria.
And I love how one of the teachers is like, so how do you pronounce your last name? And he's like, is it Schneebly? And he's like, it's actually Schneeble. So Jack Black. And it's also something that is hilarious to do, because he can do whatever he wants because he's not really Ned. Before I'm going to say two more things, and then I got to ask Mark a question. So at the end of one of the classes, Freddie comes up to Dewey and he's like, so are we going to be like goofing off like this every day? And Jack is like, we're not goofing off. We're creating musical fusion. Are we going to be creating musical fusion like this every day? Yes.
Of course.
As he's like handing out CDs to each of the class kids in the class. Now, Mark, how crazy is this that Dewey is getting away with this? And also, how illegal is this? Do you know any of these questions?
It's incredible that he's getting away with it, because, like, I mean, just think about when all of us were in school. Regardless, anyone listening, you're in a school, you're right next to another room, and they are jamming on instruments. And this isn't a music classroom. So they're constantly like banging on drums and playing different instruments. And it's just, yeah, he definitely would have been caught at some point. And especially being a sub, like, the principal's going to check in on you at some point. Mm-hmm. Like, relatively soon and often just to make sure everything's going all right, you know? So, yeah, he definitely would have been caught already. We'll get to something later that's definitely illegal, but as far as right now, I don't think he's really breaking any rules per se, any laws. I mean, he's definitely not teaching to what the curriculum and the standards are.
Yeah,
but he's connecting with the kids. He's bringing up the competence. I think he's a good teacher. I don't think he's done anything illegal though.
Do you need some kind of like certificate or educational background to be a sub?
Yes, it depends on the state, but you just need a degree.
I think it's
okay. So either of you could be a substitute teacher. You basically just have to have a degree. You have to show the state that you have the degree and then you can be a substitute teacher. Yep. So technically, yes, then he would be,
assuming he has no like degree, which we are to assume he doesn't.
I think that's pretty safe to say.
I'm going to give you guys a couple interesting facts and then we'll move on to the next scene. So early in the filming, I just want to get this out of the way before we get too far removed from it. An insecure Robert Tsai, who is playing Lawrence or Larry, who plays the keyboard, he approached director Richard Linklater and tried to talk him out of letting him be in the film because he felt he wasn't right for the part. Linklater responded that it was his very insecurity that made him exactly right for the part and kept him in. And this is ironic because Tsai's character, Lawrence, has a very similar conversation with Dewey about not feeling right for his part in the band. So that's kind of interesting. The writer, Mike White, he's actually not a fan of classic rock. The basis of the movie is actually used so Jack Black could perform his own favorite music and be like more into the character. And also, I don't know how the hell it would be as good of a movie if you didn't have like the whole culture of rock and roll to feed off of, like School of Jazz. Are you kidding me?
I'm not really sure what sort of genre you could pick.
It'd be, with Jack Black is, I don't know. It's a completely different movie if you pick a different genre. The idea for the movie came when writer Mike White moved into an apartment next to Jack Black. White could often find Jack Black running naked through the halls or blasting much of the music featured in the movie at full volume. And that
sounds about right.
Apparently sparked the idea. Another soapbox I'm going to get on. You know what? I'll get on that later. Never mind. Let's go to the next scene.
Fair enough. Okay. So I believe that was, that must've been the third day. That must've been the third day of teaching, right?
I think so. Yeah.
So we're at, day four, presumably, unless they fast forward time, which is, who knows?
Anyway. Entirely possible, but who knows? Yeah.
So during one particularly eloquent lesson that Dewey has with the kids, he teaches the children that rock and roll is the way to, quote, stick it to the man and stand up for themselves. We talked about earlier sticking it to the man, and that's what rock and roll is all about. This is the opportunity for Dewey to teach those kids about sticking it to the man. And I think this whole thing was sparked. Dewey talking about sticking it to the man was sparked when Dewey sees Zach's father, Zach the guitarist, talking to him outside of the school, dropping him off. And it's very clear that his dad doesn't want him playing the guitar. He says, no guitar until after your homework and your chores are complete. And Dewey thinks this is a great opportunity to really teach some rock and roll culture to these kids. And he presents them and he presents to them and tells them like, hey, this is what rock and roll is all about. You got to stick it to the man. In this case, you know, I'm the man. What do you have to say to me about being the man? And I got to say some of the responses that the kids give in this scene to Jack are just stellar, just 10 out of 10. Mark, what was your favorite of these?
Oh God. I wrote down two. I'll only say one. Really, I think it was the first one. Freddie going, shut the hell up, Schneeby.
Shut the hell up, Schneebly.
Yeah, that was really good. I think the one that made me laugh the most was the last one though. I think the kid's name was Billy. And it was
Fancy Pants.
Yeah, it was like right after they were done, and he's like, you're tacky and I hate you. he was being serious. Yeah, that was pretty funny. He's like, we're gonna talk to after class about that. It's serious.
Yeah, I think they're all great. I mean, the quote is, yes, but you can't just say it, man. You've got to feel it in your blood and guts. If you want to rock, you got to break the rules. You got to get mad at the man. And right now, I'm the man. That's right, I'm the man. Who's got the guts to tell me off? Huh? Who's going to tell me off? And that's when a Freddie jumps in. Shut the hell up, Schneebly. And then Dewey said, that's it, Freddie. That's it. Who can top him? Alicia says, get out of here, stupid ass.
Stupid
Dewey
ass.
Dewey says, yes, Alicia. Summer says, you're a joke. You're the worst teacher I've ever had. And Dewey says, Summer, that is great. I like the delivery because I felt your anger.
Summer like says, legitimately thank pissed. You.
And I'm pretty sure it's legitimate.
Oh, yeah,
sure. And then Lawrence, Larry, says, you're a fat loser and you have body odor.
That's my favorite one, for sure.
His deadpan delivery. And Dewey's like, pauses for a minute. He's like, all right. Now is everybody nice and pissed off? And then that's when Billy jumps in with like, you're tacky and I hate you. But yeah, excellent. One of the best like line exchanges in all of the movies. And he actually asks them about like, you know, because he says Rock ain't about doing things perfect, which is so true. And he's asking them like, what's it about? And they're like, scoring chicks, getting wasted. And he's like, no, it's sticking it to the man, which is very rock and roll. This movie should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It should. Oh,
without a doubt. If it's not, yeah, it definitely should be.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is sorry. He just like invents a song, right? Where he's singing about like he's really I had to do my chores today, so now I'm really ticked off. Like yep. So he's like going around like, oh, this is how this is how rock and roll music develops, right? Like you're really pissed at something, so you write some rock
isn't
and roll
that,
about it.
It's an excellent lesson.
It's so good. It's so good. There's like so much, even, you know, like at times, like the movie is supposed to be silly and maybe a little campy, but like there's like legitimately like you could like someone who doesn't know anything about rock and roll, show them this movie, they're going to know a lot about rock and roll.
Well, that's like the basis in the most simplistic way. When you're writing a rock song or even a metal song or a punk song, you're writing about what is upsetting you in some instances. In other instances, you know, there's love songs and stuff too. But at the very foundation of these genres, that's what you're writing about.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a great lesson.
Yeah, definitely. And I think another cool part of that scene too, going off of like the historical part of it, is they have that huge montage at the end where it's like, yes. He's showing Freddie how to like spin the drumsticks between his fingers. And then there's like, he's teaching the kids the different stage antics, and he's showing them videos of like, I can't remember who it is. I think it's like Angus from AC/DC and,
Jimi Hendrix and the guy from The Who, Townsend.
Townsend and like, God, I'm like, that's another, you mentioned chill inducing a little earlier, Ty. That kind of gave me chills too. Just like seeing all the legends of rock and roll, and the kids are just getting inspired by that. I love that. Love that montage.
And there is like a little tree he does too, like a little rock and roll tree. And he like all these bands branch off each other. And then you see like heavy metal and punk rock. And that's true. If you were to teach somebody about rock and roll, you'd have to have those branches.
God, that's
amazing.
This scene also features in, it has a lunch, like basically it's the entire day. So that was the morning, but then there's also the lunch. And the only thing that I really recall from the lunch is he's sitting at the teacher's table, kind of getting to know the other teachers at the school. And he's talking about like, I was this close to getting a chair on the Polish Philharmonic. I didn't get it. Do you know who did? Yo-Yo Ma's cousin. So Yo-Yo Ma comes up. Yeah. Another artist featured in Apocalypto.
Crazy. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? He's been thinking about Yo-Yo Ma forever.
Yeah, I'm happy you guys brought that up because I got that as well. That's so funny.
We also learned that Dewey realizes from Roz that he needs to make a presentation, and he spills coffee all over himself at realizing that because he has to talk to the parents. And he kind of gets the idea from the other teachers because Roz kind of walks away a little bit. And she's talking to somebody about like a cheese tray or like something, how they're not like, it wasn't acceptable how they set up their I can't remember if she's talking about a cheese tray or like crackers
was,
or something.
It was the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches got crossed with the turkey sandwiches.
That's right.
And now, I know like, that you know that this is a very serious problem.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's around that time where the other teachers say like one time they got her drunk and she loosened up and she really loves Stevie Nicks. So this is where Dewey gets the idea like, okay, I got to grease her up or, you know, to try to get these to try to get her get us to get to this battle of the bands, basically the field trip.
Yeah, but yeah.
Anyway, I think you got the next scene unless we got more to say here.
Nope. I think we can, I think we can get right to this, this next scene. And, there's a lot going on in this next scene. I'm just going to breeze through the basis of the plot and then we can get into the conversation again. So, like you had mentioned, this is about 2 weeks into his hiring. Dewey sneaks most of his band members out of the school to audition for the Battle of Bands competition. This is where that illegal thing comes in.
Yes.
while the rest of the class remains behind to maintain cover. When Freddie wanders off, okay, so now they get to the competition. When Freddie wanders off to be with other much older musicians, Dewey retrieves him and chastises him for doing so. Unfortunately, the group is rejected as the bill or the lineup is full. However, Hathaway, who is Summer, I believe, comes up with a plan to deceive the organizers into thinking that the band is made up of terminally ill children. Awesome plan because it works and the band is ready to play. The next day after that, Michelle and is it Eleni?
I think so. Yeah.
Eleni, who are the band groupies with Summer's approval, pitched the band's name, the School of Rock, to Dewey. Almost immediately afterwards, Roz decides to check on Dewey's teaching program, forcing Dewey to teach actual material. Roz explains that a parents' night will take place at the school the day before the Battle of the Bands competition, making Dewey somewhat concerned. A lot going on there. We kind of glanced over a lot. We can dig a little bit deeper into that. I'll just start with what I had mentioned at the beginning of that scene. Dewey sneaking the kids into the van. That is very illegal.
Oh, yeah. So illegal.
For one, he's not a licensed teacher. The seating capacity in that van is not up to code with how many kids are in there. If you were to do this as a teacher, because obviously, you know, we go on field trips once in a while, you would need permission from every single parent. Written down signatures, all that. Not to mention, you need permission from the principal, and then you would need to notify someone to drive you. I'm pretty certain that teachers can't just drive their own vehicles with kids in the car. I guess that's about all I got as far as illegalness goes. that made me laugh. Them sneaking out, and no one caught them, which is amazing. I got a ton of stuff written down, but I'm going to let you guys take it from here. What did you have, Ty, about this scene?
Like you said, this is like a lot going on. So I'm not going to steal everything. I'll mention just a couple of things. I'll try to be chronological. So when they sneak off to the audition, Metallica's The Weight is playing. It's a cover of a Killing Joke song. It's that dun, 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 which is pretty cool, sneaking away from the school music. Just wanted to throw that in there. And also their plan is elaborate. There's like a tape recording that the
it's
security.
It's so impressive.
That the security. And it's Jack teaching a lesson and like their response and everything like that. When they get there, a couple things. Tamika is nervous to sing. And JB, or Dewey, gives her a pep talk about Aretha Franklin. And one thing I will take away from that pep talk is that he kind of says, like, you know, who else has a problem with their weight? Because Tamika thinks they're going to laugh at her because she's overweight. And he's like, you know, I have a problem with, you know. But he's like, when I go on there, I'm a fucking legend. You know, like, people worship me. and then he's like, because I'm sexy and chubby, man. And then he says, like, you know, I like to eat. Is that such a crime? Which I think is pretty funny and pretty accepting.
She's like, why aren't you on a diet? It's like, I like to eat. What are you going to do?
Because I'm sexy and chubby, man. again, showing that Dewey is great with kids. And another scene showing that Dewey's starting to really care for these kids and that he could make some kind of great instructor is when he goes to get Freddy and he chews out the other guys for taking the kid and allowing the kid to like hang out with them. And he points at them. And I literally laughed out loud because he points at the last guy for a really long time and like right up in his face. And then he like throws his finger to the side.
Yeah. And he says, I thought this line was great too. He goes, stop messing around and start acting like a responsible adult. And this is coming from a guy that just drove a gaggle of students to a shady punk bar in like a sketchy ass van.
He's really grown. He's clearly attached to these kids. That's for sure.
Yeah. And then
Freddie, or he says to Freddie after this, he's like, you know, like, those guys are just posers. They're not cool. They're not real rock musicians. Rock and roll ain't about getting loaded and acting like a jerk. So anyway, I have more, but Michael, I'm gonna let you take it away for a little bit.
Well, it takes us into basically them presenting the band to the guy leading the Battle of the Band signups. Turns out the bill is filled. There's no more space. But then of course, as Mark was stating, that Summer devises a ruse, and Dewey ends up basically convincing that the guy at Battle of the Bands that they're all sick. He's from like a children's hospital, and they just wanted to have this one last opportunity to play at Battle of the Bands. That's their like dying wish, because they have a rare blood disease called stick it to demaniosis, which is so dumb.
I love that line too. When he's telling those two judges, he's like, yep, they're terminal. Every last one of them. out to the kids. And they're like, one of them's just laying on the
road. Yeah. Freddie's literally laying on the road. And when he says, like, stick it to the man-gnosis, he's like, what's that? I've never heard of it. And Dewey's like, you're lucky, because it's hell. that's great. The whole thing is great. And, of course, he agrees. He agrees to let them on the bill after that. So, pretty fucking funny. Then it gets to that them saying, like, hey, this is the name. You know, Dewey is, you know, sitting at his desk, and they're like, the School of Rock. You know, what do you think of that name? And he sits there for a minute, and he's like, the School of Rock. And he hops up on the desk, and he's like, there's no way you can stop the School of Rock. It's great.
And we shall teach rock and roll to the world.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. And we shall teach rock and roll to the world. So much. I love Jack Black, and this movie is just Jack Black. That's what it is.
There's no like other actor to like get in his way. So I know, it's pure Jack Black.
It's purely his film, and it's such a good movie. So anyway, he's eventually alerted that Miss Mullins, Roz, is approaching, and then he starts, you know, writing on the chalkboard, and she walks in. He's like, and therefore E equals MC squared. Oh, Miss Mullins, come in.
Such a like a cliche thing to teach.
Yeah,
like, what's the one thing I can think of right now? I also like when Roz is talking to him during that scene, and
oh my god, I know what you're gonna bring up.
I forget what she says, but he goes, he has this little like, "Uh-oh, Miss Mullins must be on crack, huh, kids?"
Yeah. She's like, "I'm sorry to interrupt, but Miss Lemon said she heard music coming from the classroom," and Dewey's like, "Music." Huh, music. I haven't heard any music. Uh-oh. You know what? Miss Lemons must be on crack, right, kids?
She's like, your guitar is right over there.
Yeah, what's that? And then Dewey gets to perform his song about math. And again, I will perform for you guys.
Hell yeah.
So because Roz has pointed at the instrument, and she's like, you know, well, you know, if Miss Lemonson's on crack, why do you have a guitar in here? And he's explaining how it's like one of his techniques is to teach through song. Long story short.
The really boring subjects.
Yeah, the really boring subjects he's going to teach through song. And she's like, oh, well, I'd love to sit in. Roz wants to sit in on this lesson and view or experience his unique experimental technique for teaching. So he picks up the guitar and he goes, you know, it's like, math is a wonderful thing. Math is a really cool thing. So get off your ass. Let's do some math, 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 math.
And then he goes through, it's like,
get off your ass. And so he goes through and asks the kids questions like, 3 minus 4 is -1. That's right. And 6 times a billion is 6 billion. Nailed it. And 54 is 45 more than what is the answer, Marta? 9? No, it's 8. No, it's 9. Yes, I was testing you. It's 9. And that's a magic number. It's a great. It's great. Oh,
nice job.
Nice performance.
I applaud you for that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bravo.
So anyway, Roz is not a fan of Dewey's experimental teaching, and she lets him know this, and she says, stick to the curriculum, no more of that experimental teaching. And basically Dewey wants to invite Roz to go get coffee. I say that in quotation marks. And so they go to that place, and the guy who's their waiter or whatever, she's like, and you sure you don't have any coffee? Nope. It's like they have only beer.
It's definitely so, just a dive bar.
I'll let you guys take it away. I don't want to take up too much. This is a great scene too. If either of you want to talk about it.
Yeah, basically there where they're getting quote unquote coffee, as you mentioned, Dewey goes over to the jukebox and plays Edge of 17, right?
By yep. Yeah.
So he had mentioned that earlier on in the movie, that the teachers had mentioned that. Sorry, earlier on in the movie that she got drunk doing karaoke there, and you know, right when that song comes on, she's just like in a totally different mode. And I was wondering, is she just really into the music, or is she just a total lightweight? She's like super drunk off of like half of a beer,
right?
You know, like she's like.
She's
like a wasted girl downtown after like a night out of drinking. After
it's hilarious, yeah.
Domestic beer, you know. Maybe she just really likes Stevie Nicks too.
I think she loves Stevie. I think Stevie has brought her through some times. Like maybe Stevie helped her discover herself in college with the way she's reacting. Yep. You know, and also she must have a stick so far up her butt. She's, you know, been wound so tight that even just a little bit of alcohol will uncork.
She takes like two of the like most awkward sips.
Yes. And then, yeah, so he basically is like convincing her like very tactfully, like, hey, can I take him on the field trip? And she's like, yeah, you know, like basically somewhat agrees to it when she's drunk. And then it kind of, I guess, flash forwards to him dropping her off and he's like singing some song. And I love how she's like, could you stop that, please?
It's all a cappella.
he has this little heart to heart with her about like, this is the first time in 6 years that she's worked there that anyone has asked her to do something out of school, which is like, ouch, like nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, that's pretty rough. To be polite.
Yeah. I felt bad for her in that scene because I mean, I completely understand her venting, you know, she's an administrator now. Right. And obviously being a principal or admin of some kind has its perks, you know, you get paid a lot more, but you got more responsibility and like, you just take all of the shit from parents and staff and people that are higher up than you. And you're just constantly putting out fires. And like, that's, you know, not saying that, you know, all administration is like her, but that's like a thing, you know, like you take a more demanding job and, you know, you don't get to let loose as much as you used to. So that was a big scene for Roz.
Yeah. Right. Like, and yeah, there's a lot of pressure on her and that's why she's wound so tight. And she's saying like, I didn't used to always be so much like this, but you know, all the pressure of running this like highly successful private school for little kids that cost $15,000 a year. And these parents are up her ass, you know, like tough that gig. Would wind anybody tight, you know, like, there's a couple other things and they happen within this big chunk of, kind of quick scenes that we have been going over. For one, Zach writes teacher's pet, and he tells him, like, hey, he tells Dewey, like, I got this, you know, idea for a song, and plays for him teacher's pet, and you realize that you know, Zach is really getting into this, because for a while we haven't mentioned this much, but Zach is kind of like blah about being, you know, the lead guitarist. And I think it's a lot of pressure from his dad. So the fact that he's like wrote this song is a good moment for him. And Dewey deferring his song so Zach can perform teacher's pet and they can work on it is also pretty cool. Other little cut scenes that happen is that we see Dewey getting closer with the staff, how he says, like, those who can't teach gym, basically, or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny.
Joke. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So he gets along with, you know, he's getting along with the teaching staff as well as the kids. And then Jack or Dewey kind of chastises Billy for, like, the style, like the kids come in dressed like glam metal, like 80s hair metal. And he's like, it's not really the right style. And Billy's like, you're going to talk to me about style? You can't even dress yourself. Look at that bow tie. And Dewey's like, don't you be talking to me about my bow tie. It's pretty funny. Anyway, you guys ready to move on?
I guess, Michael, did you have anything? I had a couple more from that scene.
Really? No. Everything was covered from these scenes that I wanted to cover.
Basically, all I was going to mention to wrap up the scene was it's kind of like the eve of parents' night, right? And Dewey has to have that presentation, and him and all the kids are in the room right before school is about to end, and Dewey's pump up speech goes, all right, guys, get your rest tonight, no late night parties, drink a tequila, trying to get lucky. Like 12, you know. Also in that speech, Dewey does this salute. And that's like a pretty popular gif of Jack Black when he does that little salute.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. That comes from. And basically, other than that, there was a moment at some point during that lengthy scene we were talking about where Dewey's telling Roz, he's like, you know, I wasn't planning on going to parents' night. And that just really killed me because I was just thinking about, like, talking to my principal being like, hey, I'm just not going to come to parent-teacher conferences. So,
I was just thinking about not doing it.
That really cracked me up. But Ty, you take the next scene. We've dug into that one enough.
Little factoid before jumping in. The script originally called for Jack Black and Joan Cusack's characters to fall in love following their outing to the bar, and I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, that would have been too much.
A wise choice to not do that. Anyway. So, moving on, as Dewey prepares for the parents' night, Ned receives a paycheck from the school. This is kind of when shit starts to hit the fan, from the school via mail, and realizes that Dewey has been impersonating him during the parents' meeting. The parents question what Finn has been teaching the children until Ned, Patty, and the police confront Dewey. With Roz bursting in to question what is going on, Dewey reveals his true identity, admits he is not a licensed teacher, and flees to his apartment. And a couple things. It's hilarious when the parents are questioning him about what he's been teaching, because he's like, you know, math, history, pretty much everything the kids need to know, I've been teaching them.
I got you covered.
Yeah. And then when he is doing that prep speech that Mark was talking about, he also says, like, and as AC/DC said, we roll tonight to the guitar bite, and for those about to rock, we salute you. Which is great. Those are the actual lyrics to for those about to rock. I guess a couple key moments is that Patty is suspicious because Dewey kind of leaves suspiciously, so it makes her suspicious, and she gets out of Ned that what's been going on, and they are the ones who, well, she probably forced Ned to call the police. The kids, while Dewey's kind of fumbling through his parent-teacher conference, they are like saying, like, hey, we should just tell him about the secret project, and and you know, trying to coax him into that. The winning line of this entire scene is, "I have been touched by your kids, and I'm pretty sure that I've touched them."
and then you hear in the background, "Oh my God."
Yeah, everybody just flips shit. Anyway, Michael, what are your thoughts on this scene?
Well, it's when you know, Dewey sees outside in the hallway, there's actually like a cop that shows up. A cop shows up with both Ned and Patty, and Roz is out there as well. He sees them. He knows it's over, because he left in those suspicious circumstances where he told Ned what was happening. And then Patty was there. So, you know, he for sure knows that Ned's going to give up, you know, all of this information to Patty. So he's there. He sees the cops. He's nervous. And he just like runs and he gets away. He just like runs away. He makes it. I don't know. Like somehow he escaped from the cop in this elementary school. And he just goes back home.
Yeah, that part's a little interesting. One thing that you did remind me of, though, is because he knows he's like got, he starts to say really nice things about the kids, you know, because he's like, you know, Zach is a great guitar player, you know, blah, blah, blah. The kid who makes like the lights or the, you know what I'm talking about? He does like the light programming. Yeah, like he programmed it, like he's amazing at that. And he tries to get like as many compliments in as he can, which are really sweet until he, you know, he meant to have what he said come off sweet, but it seems like he abused the children, because what else are they supposed to think? He's been impersonating somebody else. So of course your mind's going to go to like, this guy's a child molester. Mark, anything else?
No, you guys pretty much touched up on most of it. Speaking of touching, I had one line when they get back to the apartment and him and Ned and Patty are having that argument. He's talking to Ned about like, I'm not gonna get the line exactly right, but he's like, "You have no idea how cool these kids are. Like, there's this kid, Larry, like he thought he wasn't cool, but then he found out he was cool. And now he's like, he's doing all those Jack Black things, you know." That part really cracked me up. Just a little more JBG being JB, but that's all I had on that.
Yeah. Side. Yeah. You're right. That's when he's talking to Ned, like before he gets got.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think we can move on, Michael. You got the next one.
Yeah, so I believe this scene takes place the following... Is it the following morning, or is it that night? I believe it's that night where Dewey and Patty end up in, like, an argument. And Ned shows up to break up this argument. Dewey apologizes to Ned and admits that he can't give up music. Dewey can't give up music like he thinks that Ned did, because Ned used to be in the band with him. And Ned opens up to Dewey, saying that he misses the old life of being in the rock and roll band. He misses being part of Maggot Death, and he explains that he chose to move on with his life after realizing that it wasn't becoming the career that he had hoped it would be. And Ned tells Dewey that he should do the same. And that I think it's time for Ned thinks it's time for Dewey to just move out. And I think this is like the kind of the low scene, you know, the hero rises to the top and then has his great fall and then rises ever higher as most movies go. I think this is that scene that basically says like, Dewey, you got to give up. You got to give up on being a great rock and roll star. It's just not going to be happening, or it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And,
right.
It's a short scene, but I think it's really important to establish that sort of low point.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I like when, Ned says, you know, like he says, maybe we just weren't that good. You know, I like that line. Like, we weren't meant to make it. We were meant to do something else. And that's why he's moved on. You know, it reminded me of, sadly, our band, The Unrest. I was like, man, he's right. We moved on. We weren't that good.
Just move on. Yep.
Mark, you got anything else? I know this is a short scene. I don't have much to say.
Yeah, same here. I just, you kind of see how strong Dewey's leadership is, too, when the kids are arguing. You know, like they're starting to fall apart a little bit, too, briefly, you know, without Dewey in that scene. But other than that, I think you guys touched up on most of it. I guess leading into the next scene, it's the following morning. The parents of the school are in Roz's office just chewing her out. And the kids decide not to allow their homework to go to waste, and they sneak out of the school. When the new substitute discovers that they are missing, she informs Roz, who determines that they have gone to the competition. All I wrote down for this little quick scene as well is, again, just those parents all chewing out Roz in her office just made me cringe. I'm like, that's no fun for her. Tough game.
You hate to be her in that situation.
And how real is that? That could really happen.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool. Like they like Dewey enough, obviously, that they still want to do the show. And the parents like suck, but they have kind of a rightful reason, obviously, right? I mean, they're paying all this money for the school.
100%. 100%.
And this dude who they vetted like not one bit.
Let's not pretend that Dewey isn't a piece of shit in this movie.
Yeah, right. I mean, what he does is selfish. What he does is very selfish. Like, he's doing a good thing for all the wrong reasons, you know. But anyway,
you know, I don't think we ever clarified that Dewey is like the lead vocalist of this band.
Yes,
right. He's like the lead singer. He's like the main guitarist. Like, he's the man of the band. He's just using these kids as like members.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's what we grow to as we're watching the movie. He grows to lighten up. I mean, he's still the singer, but like he defers, you know, instead of his song, which I think his song is fucking awesome, by the way. He defers and says, well, they should work on Zach's song, Teacher's Pet, instead. And he has a lot of nice things to say about the kids and yada yada. Like, obviously, he's like growing as a character, even though this entire thing that he's doing is wrong because he's impersonating somebody. Anyway, let's jump into probably, it's not the last scene, but it's like the big one.
Yep.
The climax of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so a school bus with the children comes to pick up Dewey, which takes them to the Battle of the Bands competition, where they decide to play the song written by Zach, which again was, like I said, some character development on Dewey's part, because we're led to believe he's a little selfish at the beginning of the movie. Initially dismissed as a gimmick, the band wins over the crowd. However, much to Dewey's dismay, his old band, whom he was kicked out of earlier, No Vacancy, wins. I don't know how the fuck they win, by the way. During this announcement, the audience chants School of Rock, demanding an encore, another great staple in rock and roll history, or to, you know, a great thing about another learning experience is what I'm trying to spit out for people who don't particularly know everything about rock and roll. The encore is a big part of it.
Oh, yeah.
The band retakes the stage and begins performing It's a Long Way to the Top, If You Want to Rock and Roll. Apparently, they just have that on tap by AC/DC. Meanwhile, Ned, Roz, and most of the children's parents have arrived in the audience. They've been watching the whole performance. They are impressed and proud of Dewey and the band, much to the dismay of poor Patty, whom Ned breaks up with. So anyway, couple things, and then I'll let you guys, I'll unleash the dogs. It's pretty, Summer is showing her wit here, how she gets the bus driver. Like, apparently they forgot to tell the bus driver that this thing is canceled. Cause he's like, where's Schneebly? And she's like, oh, we'll pick him up at his house. I noticed a Megadeth sticker on Dewey's amp in this particular scene where I don't know if it was there. Yeah, did they like put that there later in the movie?
I don't know.
Because I didn't notice it right away.
It was like a huge sticker, huge Megadeth sticker right on the amp.
Yeah, so they wake him up, and Freddie has some very wise words here. He says, one great rock show can change the world. What the fuck, Freddie? That's a great line. and it reminded me a lot of like Queen's Live Aid performance, you know? How one great rock show really can be like this moment in time, this cultural moment. And this is coming from Freddie. What the fuck, dude?
He's the one that I think embraces the rock and roll lifestyle. It's not surprising given his character he's pretty rebellious to begin with, but he's the one character that embraces like punk and rock and roll the most, with like earlier in the movie, he's like got his like sleeves rolled up. He's not like dressed to like school uniform standards, and I think Roz is like, oh, what's going on with your uniform? He's like, it's called punk. So it, yes. coming from Freddy is perfect.
Throughout this movie, you realize that this idea of the man is a big, like, theme of the movie. Like, Sarah's character, Sarah Silverman's character, Patty, she's the man. Roz was the man. The parents are the man. The battle of the band organizer or promoters, whatever you want to call recruiters, they're the man. Sometimes Dewey is the man. So the man is prevalent and oppressive throughout the movie. And they're kind of rebelling against the man. So I like how Roz walks in and says, like, because she's just at her wit's end. She actually leaves the room at one point while they're all yelling at her. And she comes back in and she's like, all your children are missing. So the band arrives fashionably late to the performance. Like, they're not late, but they're like late for being early, I guess. And I love how one thing I'll say, then I'll kick it over to Mark, is that Dewey says, Billy, how's the beautification going? And Billy says, are you kidding? That was really funny.
I love Billy. Fucking love fancy pants.
Yeah, sassy little, we're to assume, I don't want to assume he's gay, but he's fancy pants, which is hilarious. And if he is gay, more power to Billy. I love Billy. Love the character.
Are you kidding? You're tacky and I hate you.
How's the beautification going? Are you kidding? Mark, what else you got?
Thought it was really funny. Again, some more school things I noticed. First off, they leave in the middle of school and they just convince the bus driver to get them to this gig. Yep. Bus driver probably going to be fired. Just going to put it out there, because bus drivers will show up at the beginning and the end of school, right? To drop the kids off and pick them up. Usually not in the middle unless there's an organized field trip. So that, I mean, maybe someone got them to do that. I don't know. So pretty clever on their part. Thought that was kind of funny. Also, Just gonna say that is a packed venue for what is a battle of the bands. I'm not sure that many people show up.
Stacked to the roof.
I've attended one battle of the bands in my life, and there was probably an eighth of those people there. So that was kind of interesting. You know, overall, I thought it was a fantastic end of the movie. I really loved it. Dewey finally got his crowd surf that he wanted. Beginning of the movie, really loved Roz's reaction when she goes backstage and she asks, and Dewey asks if she's mad, and she just gives this like, I am furious, but that was incredible. And then, but then she's like, I'm pissed, but that was amazing. You know, she just can't get over. She's kind of in like this delusional, or more of a euphoric state rather.
Yeah.
And I guess last thing, I fucking love that song, Long Way to the Top. I didn't care for cover as much, but that's like probably my favorite AC/DC song, so great song choice. And Ty, I'm gonna let you take this one because you mentioned it earlier, but School of Rock deserved to win that contest, not that No Vacancy. Just gonna put it out there.
Michael, what do you got for this? What did you notice?
I wanted to mention before they go on stage, Dewey kind of gives Zach's song the go ahead, just be like, hey, I'm voting for Zach's song. How do you like, this is a collective effort now. This is a progression of Dewey's character. He's like, that's just one man's vote. How do the rest of you vote? So he gives up creative control of the band to, you know, democracy. And they all decide on Zach's song, of course, but then they pray and they're his prayer. He leads them in prayer. And here's how the prayer goes. God of rock, thank you for this chance to kick ass. We are your humble servants. Please give us the power to blow people's mind with our high voltage rock. In your name we pray. Amen.
That's great.
Doesn't he talk about melting spaces at some point too?
Yes. That's like at the end. That's like the end credits where they're think.
Yeah. He definitely talks about melting faces right at the end. Yeah. But there's Dewey's uniform, his school uniform, right? Billy's like, hey,
oh, that's
you wanted a uniform too. And he's basically just wearing like an Angus Young school uniform. He looks great. The song is amazing. It gave me chills when it happened. It's such a great song.
Yeah.
Amazing performance. And the conversation between Larry and there's a quick little interchange between Larry's dad and Zach's dad. And Larry's dad looks over at Zach's dad. He's like, "Your son is very skilled." And yeah. Zach's dad looks over. "Thanks. So is yours." It's like these uptight, you know, like wealthy parents of these kids that they expect to be like, you know, these perfect sort of students. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was really good. But yeah, the song ends and we're just left with a little bit of suspense as to what's going to happen next. Who's going to win the battle of the bands. Mm-hmm.
I think this whole movie is also a great example of like parents putting too much pressure on their children and not letting the children be who they are. You know, like there's so much pressure on these kids to be perfect and not to let loose and not to be, you know, all these kids, they're unique in their own way. And that's the thing that Dewey does right. He doesn't treat any of them differently. He lets them all be who they are. You know what I mean? Like he's teaching them rock and roll. But rock and roll, for the most part, of course, there's always exceptions, but rock and roll, heavy metal, punk rock, it's supposed to be this no rules, anarchy, place for everybody, you know, kind of community. So that's kind of cool. A couple things I'll say is Gordon has to improvise the lights to a different song because it was all set up to Dewey's original song, but he improvises it beautifully. No Vacancy's playing for a little bit beforehand and they suck and Spider is moving around like a moron.
Oh God. What's that? What's that like shirt he's wearing? It's leather sleeves.
Yes, exactly. It's leather sleeves, long sleeves, leather, long sleeves. The parents, they try to get in and they try to use their like rich privilege, but also like their kids are in danger, they think, which I understand. But they're like, "We got to get in." And he's like, "I love how the ticket guy's like, yeah, that's great and all, but you're gonna have to buy a ticket like everybody else." So eventually they have to buy tickets to actually see their kids and they push to the front, kind of like, you know, you do in a concert, which is funny because they're doing it more out of concern for their kids rather than to get a good spot. I would say that No Vacancy was playing kind of like a subdued, like slower song. And they just bring the fucking house down with this AC/DC sounding Teacher's Pet. It even starts off with like, da, 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 da. You know, it sounds like an AC/DC song, basically, but it's great. And it's written by, you know, however old Zach's character is supposed to be, 15 or whatever, maybe younger in this movie. And then the parents are kind of realizing that although what happened was incredibly illegal on many fronts, they're seeing their kids through different eyes and these kids kick ass in their own way and are very talented. The Rock Got No Reason, Rock Got No Rhyme. That's a great lyric. Just wanted to point that out there. And it's how you would say it. You wouldn't say rock has no reason, rock has no rhyme. You would say got. That's how a true rock and roll lyricist would write it. When Roz comes back, stage at the end, Spider approaches her and very attracted to her. And he's like, "You're so hot." And she's like, are you warm or whatever? But he has a tattoo on his stomach that says sex. Just going to throw that out there.
Yo, fuck Spider.
Yeah, fuck that dude. He's a fucking loser. Anyway, so No Vacancy wins. They get booed. They don't even get to play an encore, and they won. So School of Rock comes out and plays a long way to the top, like Mark had mentioned. So that is that scene, and it's great. It's fucking fantastic. I would put it above. I've watched the Bohemian Rhapsody. It's better than that. This movie's better than that movie anyway. This movie's better than a lot of rock biopics or biopics or wherever we landed on that pronunciation. So yeah, if it's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, put this fucking movie in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It deserves it. Its heart's in the right place. The script is beautifully written. Jack Black is Jack Black, and that's a beautiful thing. He gets to be unfiltered Jack Black. He's not riffing off really anybody. He's a star, other than the kids, which is great. Anyway, I feel like I've delivered a monologue at Congress right now. So does anybody have anything else to say about this scene?
That's just a beautiful way to sum up the song or sum up the movie with an excellent song.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, Michael, I think you have the very last scene in the movie, which is kind of like the last scene / like the credits scene.
Yeah. So it's a bit of an epilogue. So sometime later, and after you see the camera kind of pans in and shows an after-school program called School of Rock has been opened. So Dewey is now, basically using his skill and passions to teach kids after school in this after-school program about rock and roll. And we see Dewey teaching and coaching the students that he previously played with in the band. He's just kind of working with them. They're riffing, they're jamming, whatever. And Ned is teaching very beginner, very young students.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is one of my favorite scenes in the movie, just because it's like, I don't know if this was rehearsed or not, but it's just Dewey and Zach and Katie on bass and Freddie on drums, and then the three background vocalists.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're all kind of just like riffing and playing. It's a Long Way to the Top. They're continuing that song. And I just thought it was like a really, really cool scene. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if this, how rehearsed this was, but Dewey's giving each of the kids an opportunity to like play the solo in this extended jam session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they, Freddie gets his drum solo, Zach gets his guitar solo, et cetera. Everyone gets to play the song. And, I thought it was just like a really, really nice way to end this movie.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I love the, "Oh, my gut got busted." Because he tells Freddie to play a gut busting solo. And the little moment he has with the girls, Tamika, and unfortunately forgot the other two's names, but the other background vocalists, where, he's like, "Re-de-de-de-de-de-de-de-de," and like they're copying what he's saying back. Yeah, yeah, right. It's great. It's classic. And then, Jack or Dewey, whatever, Jack Black saying like, pointing to the credits and being like, "I don't know that guy." who is that guy?
Definitely just breaking the fourth wall in this final scene.
It's pretty funny. Mark, anything else you noticed in that last scene? It is a great way to end the movie. I agree with that.
Yeah. Not really. You guys touched up on it. I do have some factoids. Kind of a nice little segue into this. There are, if you didn't know, there's actual School of Rocks. Okay, so there's like actual, literally the same thing, right? Rock and roll school. Okay, I actually randomly passed one in St. Paul, like recently, which I thought was, I had to do like a double take. Like, what School of Rock? Anyway, did some research, took this right off of Wikipedia, so I will be crediting them, but there are 184 School of Rock schools in the United States, spread out amongst about 30 states have these School of Rocks. Okay. And there's also 8 other countries that have these School of Rocks: Australia, Great Britain, Mexico, Australia. I think I already mentioned, but anyway, tons of these School of Rocks. So the School of Rock, the actual one, was created by this guy named Paul Green in 1998, started in Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So it's actually older than the movie. And around the same time frame when they were filming the movie School of Rock, Green was making a documentary, I think through like VH1 or something, called Rock School, about about his School of Rock. Okay, follow me. This is right off of Wikipedia. Midway through the 9 months of shooting Rock School, they learned that Paramount, it was releasing a fictional film called The School of Rock, featuring Jack Black as Dewey Finn, would be rock star teaching children to play rock music. Mike White, the director of, or screen, the guy who wrote the movie, said he never heard of this Paul Green before, kind of an honest mistake. And then Green had been quoted of saying, "Well, I actually prefer our documentary Rock School." He said, quote, "It opened a lot of other doors, corporate partnerships, and given us access to rock stars that we play with." And he had mentioned about the School of Rock movie. "It was like Jack Black was the nationwide commercial for us and our movie industry, and our movie was the industry cred." So he was like, we just had more of like the, the more like really legitimate rock musicians, probably prefer his documentary. But he said, in another quote, he says, I could have, you know, realistically, we maybe could have had a lawsuit, but he's like, this is just a big promotion for my school.
Yeah, my, exactly. And,
you know, so I thought that was super interesting that around the same time frame, those two movies were coming out. And yeah, these things are legitimately they're legitimate schools all around the world. If you guys, if anyone watched that, do you guys ever see Play by Dave Grohl last year where he did that like 20-minute song where he played like seven instruments or whatever?
Nope.
No.
You should watch it. It's awesome. But he did this big promo where he played like all the different instruments and like recorded over it. And that was basically a big promotion for not the School of Rock, but like something really similar, basically. Hmm. Where, you know, he's talking about how he wants kids to, you know, challenge themselves musically and, you know, pick up rock and roll and yada yada. But thought that was just kind of interesting that these schools are a genuine thing going on.
Well, I'm glad that it ended well, right? It didn't end, you know, with some shitty lawsuit or with like this awkward animosity or anything like that. Like, glad that everyone kind of benefited from it, I guess.
The only thing I want to add to that too is that I've never even heard of this rock school thing. I want to watch that.
Yeah, same here. I also hadn't heard of that. I guess what were your overall thoughts on the movie? I guess if you had to like give it a quick little review.
I'll jump in because I've been saying this the whole time. Love this movie. I think this movie is honestly like a perfect movie. And I know I'm being extremely biased and it's part of my childhood and there's nostalgia, but this is probably one of my favorite. We grew up with this when this came out and I prefer this movie. This movie makes me laugh harder, than this is a bold thing guys, I'm about to say, but this makes me laugh harder than Spinal Tap. I prefer this movie. I think they're both great in different reasons, showing you like insight into rock and roll, but I prefer this movie over The Hangover. I love this movie. I'm giving this movie is like near perfection. I'm giving it, if it's not a 99%, it's hard to give something 100%, but fuck, this movie's awesome. No qualms here.
Dang. I honestly wasn't expecting that. I didn't realize that that you liked this movie that much.
Love it.
I gotta like, I love it. Love them. Yeah, for me, I also really like this movie. I don't know, as far as Jack Black movies are concerned, I don't know if I prefer Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny to School of Rock. I think I do. But I have almost no issues with this movie. I think, you know, obviously like it's a comedy, so sometimes there's these like goofy little plot holes and stuff, but I think Jack Black has like an absolute stellar performance, and him just like rocking solo is nice. I think, I don't know that there's many other movies where it is just him. Of course he's like the primary guy in like Tenacious D and stuff, but there's also, you know, there's Kyle Gass to fall back onto and all that. So like this has got to be my favorite performance of Jack Black, that's for sure. What about you, Mark?
First off, Ty, those of you listening might say, well, that's a real hot take rating this movie like a high 90s. Well, you know, I was kind of thinking too after the movie, I'm like, God, like if I were to rate that, it'd probably be like high 80s. I was thinking like 87. And I went to Rotten Tomatoes. It's like a 91 or 2%. It was like a fantastic Rotten Tomatoes score. So not that far off, but, I'd say as far as Jack Black movies go, I think this is his best movie, especially where he's the centerpiece. My personal favorite movie that Jack Black is in, where he has a relatively big role, is Tropic Thunder. That's not a main Jack Black movie though. You know, where he's like the guy.
Stroke the shaft, cradle the balls, swallow the gravy.
Another playback too. But you had mentioned it, Ty. It's you know, as far as like for kids our age or adults our age, like millennials, I guess, when we were kids, you know, rock and roll was still so relevant because we had, you know, movies like School of Rock that were just a huge success in pop culture, right? We had things like Guitar Hero and Rock Band, right? That was really good for exposure rock to the mainstream. I would even go as far as like the Tony Hawk games, okay, with those soundtracks. They had, you know, punk metal. They had tons of songs on there that are, that dive into that. You know, even the older you got too, like with the Vice City soundtrack and Pick of Destiny, you know, it's just like back then, I feel like even though rock wasn't in its heyday, we still were exposed and it was still popular, even this classic rock. And I just wish that would happen now where there's just something that kids can latch onto, you know, that that's such a huge pop culture success. Like if there was something as popular as Fortnite that had classic rock in it, like that would be, I think that could really help bring rock back a little bit. I'm not saying rock's dead. There's tons of kick-ass bands and whatnot now, but it's just not as, not as big as it used to be.
That's true.
The same way as that, but
you know, I was thinking, I think that like critically looking at this movie, like I would probably rate this movie higher than any other Jack Black movie, like from like a critical, completely objective perspective. But, and I know Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny is a dumb movie, but I just love it.
Oh, it's great.
So
it's
like
great.
Subjectively, I think I like Pick of Destiny more, but objectively, I think it's gotta be School of Rock.
It's just a heartwarming movie.
For sure.
Awesome stuff.
I want to give one more fact here before I wrap it up. The rock band Led Zeppelin, they play Immigrant Song in this movie, and they are notoriously hard to work with to allow their music to be licensed for commercial purposes. Knowing this, Richard Linklater filmed a plea by actor Jack Black in front of 1,000 screaming fans, imploring the band to let the production use the Immigrant Song in the movie. The plea worked, and the film, the filmed request is included on the DVD, so you can watch this this plea. Aptly enough, Jack Black introduced the band's three surviving members, Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, and John Paul Jones, when they were the recipients of the esteemed Kennedy Center honor in the presence of President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama on the 20th of December, 2012.
So that's pretty neat, cool.
that they got the Immigrant Song in this movie. 'Cause yes, Led Zeppelin, it's hard to convince them. So anyway, Any other closing thoughts, guys, before I, you know, plug our butts and we take off?
No, I'm just glad I got to watch that movie again. I forgot how good it was.
Same here. And like a lot of our playbacks, if you want to learn about the history of rock and roll, this is a must. School of Rock, Walk Hard, Spinal Tap. Give all those movies a watch.
Oh, they're all great. They're all excellent.
Enlighten yourself into the world of rock and roll.
Rock and no reason, rock and no rhyme. You better something
get
on
me
time.
To school on time.
Yeah, there you go. Because if you want to be the teacher's pet, baby, you better forget. Okay, anyway.
So good.
Love it.
Ooh, la, la, la,
you know, I think in 2013, 10 years after the movie came out, Jack Black and those kids, now basically, you know, like full adults, performed that song. They had like a show that they did 10 years after the movie was released.
And Long Way to the Top too. Yep, they did both them.
Beautiful thing.
Baby,
beautiful
we thing. Were making straight A's. We were stuck in the good. I don't know the lyrics, guys. I'm
in
sorry.
The dumb days. You didn't listen to the song on repeat? Come on.
Because if you want to be the... How many times? Okay, we got to end this. Go watch the movie. It's actually shorter than this podcast, believe it or not.
Imagine that.
What can I say? Supermetalworld.com. That's where you can find all of our other content, both our podcast episodes and our blogs and our articles and all that great stuff. Follow us on social media, Super Metal World. We're everywhere that you stream a podcast. Please subscribe or follow, rate, review, do something, just one thing, share it with a friend, whatever. To get the podcast out there, and that really helps us. And do you get anything out of it besides like the goodwill of knowing you did that? That's all you get out of it. We're not going to pay you to do that. but I mean, we really appreciate it. So please do that.
It means a lot.
It means a lot. It means a lot. And well, you could be that one guy who's like, hey, I know this podcast is not very big. You know, it's my podcast.
It's a little underground.
It's this little underground thing. And eventually we can get so big that you'll hate us and be like, I remember when they were just small and talking about how they didn't have any money.
Yeah, we're corporate sellouts.
Yeah. And now they're just sellouts. So if you want to be a part of our journey to become corporate sellouts, please share.
It's really the goal.
That's all we want to be.
We want
to eventually disappoint you guys. That's all we're hoping for.
I want to sell out so bad.
Yeah. We want you guys to say, like, remember in 2020 when those guys were actually good? Now they suck. So please make that dream
come true. That's the goal.
And share it with one fucking person. And I swear to God, guys, it's so hard to get you to rate and review on iTunes. So I'm kind of sick of asking, but I'll say it again. If you don't want to rate and review on iTunes, that's fine. But just do one of the things I asked. Just maybe just share it with somebody. I think that's the best thing, really. Share it with
Ty, really quickly, if you're still listening to this podcast at this point, if you rate and review us on iTunes, give us 5 stars. Rate and review us on Facebook even. Give us 5 stars. I will give you a Super Metal World sticker.
Yes, they're high quality stickers.
Yes, they are great stickers. You know, if you're one that puts stickers on your laptop, like I know I do, maybe you put stickers on your beer fridge, your guitar case,
mm-hmm.
whatever it may be. Okay, we have great stickers. I have like 15 of them at my house. Rate and review us on iTunes. We've been watching them, so we know. Okay, don't just rate and review 4 stars. You're not getting one. Okay, yeah. 5 stars.
5 stars.
5 stars. All you got to say is this podcast rules! Point. Done. Free sticker.
Yeah. And you know what else? You'll even get like a handwritten little thing from Mark. It'll say like,
yeah, you will.
Here's this fucking sticker. Yeah. Yeah. Or like, you know, a personal message. And maybe Michael and I will also say something like, and Mark will write it in his own handwriting. Cause we all live in different places. So, you know, we'll say good on you, bud, or something there.
Good show, chap.
Maybe Mark will like stamp his deodorant on the page.
Mark will put lipstick on and kiss the paper.
Because if you want to be the teacher's pet,
all right,
fucking rate on iTunes. Okay, anyway,
let's get out of here.
We better wrap this up. Let's get the fuck out of here. Nobody's listening anymore, except for Danielle. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening, babe. You're still. Your biggest fan. Okay.
Does Danielle, you want a sticker? Does she have a sticker?
She does have a sticker. She hasn't put it anywhere yet. So Danielle, maybe you should put your sticker somewhere. It's one thing to carry a sticker. It's another thing to actually place it somewhere. So that being said. Also, one more thing. Somebody searched exactly Ty Bommersbach Danielle, and it's weirded me out. Who searched my first and last name plus Danielle's name? We can see that in our stats, guys. So
we're super fans.
Yeah. And again, nobody's listening this far in, but Rock Got No Reason, Rock Got No Rhyme, Horns High.
Horns High.
Horns High.